You've tuned in to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. We're joined by John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson from The Athletic. Most of us are here in sunny El Paso. We went to Marcus Freeman's press conference this morning with Coach Hinson, a very impressive guy, by the way, from Oregon State, serving as the interim head coach. And, you know, we talked to Marcus Freeman about a variety of things. Pete Sampson, O'Malley and I have already chimed in on this with our instant analysis. Just some of your thoughts from today's press conference.
You know, it's a mix of, all right, what are you going to learn about who is dialed in to play in the game? You know, that's part of every bowl game these days. It's not the college football playoff. You know, so you got some new blood there. But, you know, I want to see, you know, I asked about Jeremiah Love. That's, I think, the player that I'm maybe most interested to see, even though he's played a bunch this year. I want to see him be RB1 and not just be running outside the tackles or two back sets. I'd like to see sort of how they force feed his opportunities. You know, other than that, I mean, look, I'm curious to see Steve Angeli and Charles Jagasaw as much as anybody. You know, Christian Gray maybe more an expanded role, but I think the thing I'm most interested to watch is how the run game changes without Audric Estime, and without Joe Ault and without Blake Fisher, but with a more willing runner at quarterback and Steve Angeli. So I think that's what I'm most interested to see at kickoff.
Yeah, I agree. Jeremiah Love, I've been kind of calling for he and Price to have expanded roles since Duke range. Neither one, Pete, we talked about this in instant analysis, Pete and JB, no player on Notre Dame has carried the ball more than seven times in a college football game. I never would have guessed that coming into the year. I think they all could carry the ball more than seven times, including Payne, the three of them. I expect Notre Dame to have some success on the ground, but man, the one thing, you know, Blake Fisher had a good year blocking for the run. Joe Ault had a good year blocking everything that he ever tries to block. Mitchell Evans was a good run blocker. They got to be able to run the ball because that can make Angeli effective. The one guy I want to see, they have lost Maris Leafau and they have lost Thomas Harper. If Jalen Snead doesn't play 25 snaps, he's never going to play 45 snaps because this is open for him to play a position on the football team. This is it. You can play Will. You can play Rover. You don't have a good enough nickel where you say we're just going to nickel him out the entire time. I need to see something out of Snead, especially as a redshirt freshman. He's kind of the one guy to watch. I'm going to focus on with the binoculars, I think, as long as he's on the field.
And I think T.O., this need can be an impact player in this game. I don't think that Oregon State, especially this cobbled together Oregon State lineup, will have seen too many people with the speed, especially of JJB and Snead as well. So I think that's an opportunity component in this game for the Irish. I'm with you. I wrote it in my prediction. I really want to see what Love and Price do. We would kind of presume with the bulk of the backfield workload, we know they're still going to use Payne and sprinkle in Ford some, but this should be a great showcase opportunity for Love and Price. And then I'm really excited to watch Notre Dame's offensive line very closely in this game to see what they do together, because in many respects it should be the future of the Notre Dame O-line moving forward.
Yeah, and that offensive line is very key, especially as it pertains to Steve Angeli, who will be making his first career start. As everyone knows, Notre Dame's two tackles are out of this game. Joe Ault preparing to be a first-round draft choice in the spring, and Blake Fisher also not in the lineup. Tim, you pointed out in our instant analysis, I mean, if you look across that offensive line, only one guy there had won a starting job in the preseason. So, you know, Angeli is it's really essential that Charles Jagasaw and Tosh Baker perform well. They certainly have the size to play those two positions. Do they have the quickness to handle the edge rushers of Oregon State? And that is namely Lolo Hay from the one defensive end, number eight, and then Chatfield, number 10, who leads the team with nine sacks. That's my biggest concern, is can they keep him? You know, because I think if Angeli has time to throw, Notre Dame's wide receiving core is very healthy. I think if he has time to throw, I realize that his previous performances this season don't compare anything to this, the mindset, the emotions going into the game. But I think if he has a clean pocket, he can have some success.
I think he'll do fine, provided he has protection. As Preacher said, I don't want to turn this into 60 minutes on wondering if Steve Angeli can play. He has all new guys behind him, tight ends that are not the tight ends they would want to have technically, and a bunch of different offensive linemen. It's not even on Steve Angeli anymore. They have to somehow give Angeli a chance to succeed, and then I think he can. If he's under duress, this has nothing to do with Steve Angeli. It's not going to be his fault if they lose this game, if he's just getting murdered from Tosh Baker's right side. Look, Tosh Baker has to be better than he was 2 years ago. I'm not trying to bring that up. But he had two starts in his career, and they were both absolutely awful. So I don't expect that. But he is the biggest question mark on the line, not five-snap guard Charles Jagasa.
Yeah, no, I would agree. And I think we could, you know, I mean, I don't think they would hesitate to put Emil Wagner in if it's a pass-blocking problem. I think that they will do that. But again, we mentioned this in the instant analysis. I was really glad to hear the comments from Marcus Freeman about Mike Brown, the new receivers coach, who he said really hit the ground running when he came in. He started coaching right away. He wasn't going to wait, you know, to get to know them. The setting, the situation wouldn't allow for that. Chancey Stuckey's gone. Mike Brown's in. They need a receivers coach to coach those guys up and get them ready for a bowl game. And it sounded like, according to Freeman, that he didn't hesitate to, you know, to jump in there and be their coach. He is their coach. He became their coach as soon as he checked in at Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'm glad that you guys mentioned Snead, because I feel like we talked about Snead at the bowl game last year about this is an opportunity to sort of seize some momentum. And kind of he played a bunch, but it certainly didn't turn into anything moving forward. And like, but you're right. If it doesn't happen for him against Oregon State, I wonder what's there to happen for him. And coaches tell you everything you need to know about how much they play you in games that matter. Clemson, USC, Louisville, Duke, Ohio State, Jalen Snead average 8 snaps a game. This is kind of one of those games, though. I mean, Oregon State, for all their opt-outs, fits more into this mold than it does Central Michigan or Tennessee State or Stanford when he was playing 25 snaps a game. So Snead's really got to show something. He's got the ability to do it. I think how much he plays will tell us a ton about how he practiced over the last 3 weeks. Yeah. Cause it's much more of a practice. Are you ready? Did you show us? And, away from the scenes then, oh boy, just throw out there and we'll see what you can do.
And this should be the moment that Snead has banked the most reps going into this game. I mean, he's had those guys opt out or who are gone in front of him. So this stands to reason that he should go into this game having banked more reps over the 3 week course of bowl prep, Pete.
You know, I would very quickly want to say, just for listeners, because I don't think we got an over under on these questions, like Jalen Snead's the young guy that's going to play other than Christian Gray. Drake Bowen's the future at Notre Dame in the middle, either at Mike or Will. Drake Bowen might not play a snap today other than the meaningful snap. JD Bertrand is in there to play this game. That is exactly how it's going. Jack Kaiser is going to play this game, not Jaden Osbury. People keep thinking, I'm so excited to see the young linebackers. You're not going to see a single young linebacker ever.
Google games right around the corner.
Yeah.
Well, you know, JD Bertrand didn't. He's the only captain that stayed in the mix and stayed in this Sun Bowl game. They're not going to sub him out.
They love Bowen. Like, I asked Kaiser about the linebacker, but Bertrand gushed about Bowen, and it was off the field, which is the most important thing, because that's where JD Bertrand became a great player at the beginning, was toughness and off the field and his straight line speed. He said Bowen is a sponge. He's always in there. Jack Kaiser echoed it. He's like, Drake Bowen can call the defense now. Kaiser is totally frank with him. It was a great interview, actually. We're going to get a lot of Jack Kaiser great interviews coming up, I think, in the next 12 months. He said, I asked about the three linebackers. He mentioned them all by name. He said, Drake Bowen, you had him next to you in August. You had no idea what was going to happen. He and Jaden Osbury. Now he can call a defense. He said, Jaden Osbury does not have a position to settle into yet, but that's how the linebackers go. And he even said, I don't know if he wants to find one position, because sometimes when you find one position, you get stuck behind somebody. Mm-hmm. And that guy keeps playing. So he said, now he's talking about himself, obviously. And of Jalen Snead, he said immediately, we want to put Jalen Snead in one-on-one situations. That sounds like pass rushing to me for this game.
Right. Hey, John, I want to jump back to you because Marcus Freeman mentioned to us that Mike Denbrock and Lauren Landau were in town to speak to the team briefly. You and Tom Loy, contrary to what you might see on Twitter, you and Tom Loy were the two guys that broke that story. Not Pete Thamel. Pete Thamel breaks a lot of stories, but he didn't break that one. I just jump in here and talk to us. Yeah, I've known Mike Denbrock for two decades. This will be his third tour of duty at Notre Dame. He truly is a Notre Dame guy. I know people hated the idea of not getting Andy Ludwig last year, and clearly Notre Dame didn't handle that well. But when it came down to it, Andy Ludwig had a choice, and he chose not to come to Notre Dame. Mike Denbrock has now chosen Notre Dame three times.
Yeah, and look, shameless plug here. Mike Denbrock today was just named Football Scoop's Offensive Coordinator of the Year as voted by his peers. So people a lot smarter than me made the vote for Mike Denbrock to be Football Scoop Offensive Coordinator of the Year for 2023. Again, as you talk to people about both of those gentlemen, their smarts continue to come up, especially with Lauren Landau. I think he's written some books. People talk about his speed training. He's tapped into the science. Those are elements that are important for Marcus Freeman that he really wants to dial into as he moves this program forward. And as for Denbrock, I think it's his versatility. He's run a number of different types of offenses. He's not going to be adamant that just one system works. He will tailor his system to fit the personnel and to best utilize the personnel. I think that's incredibly important. The coaches I talk to have the most respect for their peers who adapt their systems to their personnel rather than who try to force their personnel to adapt to their systems. And I think Mike Denbrock is a guy that's adapts his system to his personnel. Notre Dame rewarding him with a four-year contract, extremely lucrative. He'll be among the top five highest paid offensive coordinators in college football. Notre Dame swooped in and affected all of this in great haste because Mike Denbrock had not signed his extension with LSU. And I do want to note, I think this is really important to note, even after Notre Dame came in, LSU tried to counter, and LSU went to the $2 million range to try to keep Mike Denbrock. Notre Dame did not get outbid, and Notre Dame gave a fourth year.
To your point, John, I did what essentially was a film review just to try to get a good idea of what we could expect from Mike Denbrock. And there's some film out there where you can get like Cincinnati versus Notre Dame. These are all the Cincinnati plays, and you see them one right after another. When you see them in that kind of sequence, that's when you have an understanding that Mike Denbrock is going to keep defenses on its toes by going here, there, never settling into one particular thing. Now, look, if they're running the football against somebody consistently, I'm sure he'll stick with that and do that. But he was going up against, you know, Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, and actually Notre Dame did a pretty good job of keeping the points down in the loss to Cincinnati. But you can see you mentioned versatility. That I think that's a good word, variety, certainly in what he has to offer. And the fact that, look, he did a great job at LSU. When you're number one in the country in scoring and total offense, everybody's going to take notice and be excited about that coordinator coming in. We have a question on that, which I find kind of humorous, in the second segment that we'll address. But, I think Mike Denbrock is a better coordinator than he was when he was at Notre Dame, or a better offensive mind than he was at Notre Dame. He was with Luke Fickell. He was with Brian Kelly once again at LSU. And I think that he's done a great job. I want to finish up segment one talking about something that Tim and I addressed in the instant analysis after the press conference today. And that was the naming of the captains for the bowl game. Michael Vinson, DJ Brown, and Javonte Jean-Baptiste joined JD Bertrand as the four captains for this game. And it was really kind of heartening to hear those guys, especially a guy like Michael Vinson. Michael Vinson, I heard a story that when they voted for captains, okay, here are the offensive players, check a box. Here are the defensive players, check a box. There were no special teams players listed on that. So that would have been a hell of a write-in candidacy that Michael Vinson would have needed in order to be named a captain. But good for him. We know how devoted he is to his beloved Notre Dame, and he will be serving as one of the four captains along with JD Bertrand, of course, for the Sun Bowl.
I just thought it was cool, and I'll go briefly here, that Freeman said he asked JD Bertrand first, and then he moved on to the coaches and everybody else, because you do owe JD Bertrand that question as the captain that stayed in that situation. So I think that's nice to hear. And DJ Brown and Michael Vinson must have been so excited to be named captains as sixth-year players for a situation like that.
I can't think of a player who's, I guess, maybe Q rating rocketed up as much as JJ Beads did over the course of the second, like a half of one season. I mean, he was pretty good at the beginning of the year, but like when training camp started, it was like, are they going to start Jovante Jean-Baptiste or Nana Osafa-Mensah? Who knows? And by the end of the year, like, how is this even a question? And then, I mean, his personality is so fun. I think that you could blame Priester for almost getting him to opt out of the Sun Bowl when he talked about how bad the weather it was here in 2010. Just like I feel bummed as a reporter that we only got 1 year with him because he seems like just a really huge breath of fresh air around kind of just Notre Dame. He's got a unique personality. And man, he was a really, really good player. So props to him for not just playing in the game, but the entire season he put in at Notre Dame.
And I would just add one quick anecdote on that. He's like a professional video game player. Like he streams on Twitch and he has like a world ranking and he's climbed incredibly high. And like, this is one thing I talked to people at Ohio State about when he first got here. They're like, he could go pro in football or video games. So that's another level. That's another level to the Renaissance man that is JJB.
Hey, and I also appreciate JJB for another thing. I think coaches, fans, and reporters all appreciate when they watch games is he was really good when they played big teams like Ohio State and Clemson and USC and Duke and Louisville. And those are the fun guys to watch too. Not the ones that, hey, he had four pressures against Stanford. That's a great way to go out. Yeah.
Well, he made himself into a viable NFL draft candidate. That's great. Pete, I agree with you, man. It was great. At first, I thought he was a little bit standoffish. He was probably a little bit, you know, nervous, and he didn't know us. But he certainly he evolved with each passing time.
Telling him about snow for like 5 minutes there was not great at the end of the press conference.
He made a comment about going to warm weather, and I'm like, well, look, dude, I mean, 13 years ago, it snowed 8 inches or whatever it was the night before the game. Remember, O'Malley, Sampson, and I were together. We came out of a bar, and oh, my God, look at the snow, and that it stuck around for the game. Then the day after the game, it was sunny and beautiful again. It truly is the Sun Bowl here in El Paso. Coming up, segment two, Burning Up the Boards.
If you're coming to a game this season, you have to check out Game Day Your Way, the official tailgate service provider of Notre Dame. Game Day Your Way offers everything you need, including tailgate gear, catering, and even beverage delivery right to your spot. And their Irish Express transportation from Chicago allows you to tailgate while you travel to their all-inclusive party zone in South Bend. Let Game Day deal with all the hassle so you can focus on the fun. For tailgates, tickets, transportation, and more, visit GameDayYourWay.com.
Welcome back to segment two, Burning Up the Boards. Our first question is a three-parter from Shibe43. Apparently, Priester was on the same wavelength as Shibe43 because we got a lot from him right here. With two more talented running backs coming on board, do you see either Ford or Payne moving on after the season? He conveniently left out other running backs. Does the importance of getting one or two additional wide receivers increase with Dembrock running more four wide receiver sets than previous offensive coordinators did for the Irish? And do you see most offensive skill players sticking around through the spring to see how they might fit in Dembrock's system?
Anybody can opt out these days. And so, yeah, I would imagine that, you know, Jabron Payne may look at, because Marcus Freeman wasn't talking about a four-headed monster today. He was talking about the two running backs. So Payne was excluded, even though Payne has played an integral role in at least with what Jared Parker did. But yeah, I mean, Ford, I don't think so, because I think he chose Notre Dame to be at Notre Dame, and he's going to be he's a great special teams player on multiple levels, and I think he'll stay. Payne, I don't think any of us know him really well. He has been their short yardage guy, and they relied on him all season, so there is an opportunity there to be among the top three, certainly going into next year. But you know, Neas Williams is coming in. O'Malley's going to put him on the depth chart for sure. So anything's possible today with regard to transfers.
Payne is, as long as Dylan McCullough is here, Payne has a role.
There's something to that. I would think that these guys would stay through spring just to sort of see what the new guys look like. Because, I mean, look, I get it that Neas Williams looked good at Irish Invasion and his highlights are great, but
What are you talking about? Why are we limiting something to Neas Williams right now, Pete? I'm not sure you watch enough film.
I'm just saying sometimes four-star recruits, they're just okay when they get to college. I mean, it's like, do you think Jack Kaiser is going to move on because Jalen Snead's coming in? Like that it's a similar kind of question. We just don't like, so I would wait to let spring practice play out. The third part, do you see most offensive skill guys sticking through the spring to see how they fit in Mike Denbrock's system, which finished number one in points per game, yards per play, and everything else? Yeah, I think everyone fits in that system. The four wide receiver sets, if he ran it five times, it would be more than previous Notre Dame OCs, including himself. Because when you play four wide receivers, you're taking a tight end off the field. Notre Dame doesn't like to take tight ends off the field because they're great. So yeah, I would say a lot more 11 personnel than 12 personnel. Maybe that balance shifts a little bit, but I don't think we're going to get to a whole lot of 10 personnel.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree, and I'll go back to what we said in the first segment. Mike Denbrock's versatile. He had the personnel to run four wides a lot at LSU and in some other places. But again, Marcus Freeman does not want to run a tempo four wide, spread the field, go at mock speed offense. That's not how he has designed this program. That's not his vision carrying this program into the future. And so, again, I think that's where Denbrock, as a veteran OC, is really valuable in this situation. I think it's huge, as I dance around a little bit here, I think it's huge that Marcus Freeman is now surrounded by Al Golden and Mike Denbrock, two really veteran guys that have seen almost everything there is to see in college football as Marcus continues to grow as a head coach. As it pertains to the running backs, look around the country, look everywhere. I mean, Travis Etienne just transferred from Florida to Georgia.
I saw that is nuts.
Yeah. So you have to expect that somebody will depart that room, because that's not unique to Notre Dame or anywhere else. It's unique if somebody doesn't leave. What Notre Dame just did in recruiting is remarkably unique, because the Irish essentially didn't have a decommitment from like July or August on through the end of the year. And then one final note that I didn't get to squeeze in on the first segment. For all the talk about Andy Ludwig not coming to Notre Dame and then it forcing Jared Parker in, let's not ignore the fact that Jared Parker had a hell of a lot better year than Andy Ludwig did. So I think that's worth mentioning. And I know that Utah didn't have Cam Rising and kept thinking they were going to get him and never did get him. But they had guys that they recruited. They didn't play as many hard defenses as what Notre Dame played. So I would just point that out there, that it ended up working out well for everybody.
I was going to make a joke about Aeneas Williams coming in the spring. So Pete Sampson reports that all four running backs might be transferring out because of that. But to be fair, I think of the four running backs returning, the least likely to move on by a wide margin is Jeremiah Love. And then I would not ever be surprised if anybody else moved on.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And JB, you burst the bubble that I created for a lot of Notre Dame fans, because I talked about Denbrock's quick game and getting the ball hands of the quarterback into the playmakers, but
he can still do that, but that doesn't mean he's running at this frenetic tempo.
Right. No, I agree with that. Question from Go Fight Win Go Irish: while I'm thrilled he came back, are you at all surprised by the universal praise of the Denbrock hiring? Given that A, people didn't seem too happy with him as the OC last time around, and B, the quick choice didn't seem to allow for a thorough nationwide search.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I was going to duck when I went on the board when that name was coming out, and I was pleasantly surprised. Everybody seems on board. I love Mike Denbrock.
I think there are layers at play there. I obviously was not around or living here in South Bend back in 2016 when he was ushered out, so I don't have as much perspective on that. But I'm a believer that good coaches continue to grow, and we've seen Mike Denbrock continue to grow and evolve. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think in the fall of 20 or 21, I did a pretty in-depth feature on Denbrock for Football Scoop, and I'll try to find it and link it on the board. And some of the stuff he did at Cincinnati was pretty remarkable. And then obviously what he did this year and tutoring a Heisman Trophy winner and setting records after they just had Joe Burrow a couple of years ago and all of that. I think that ties into it. And let's not, from a Notre Dame fan perspective, when somebody asks about the praise, let's not overlook the fact that there are a lot of fans out there, gratified simply because Notre Dame went and took Brian Kelly's offensive coordinator away from LSU. So there's a huge groundswell of feel good for that reason, especially knowing that Brian Kelly still tried to keep Mike Denbrock and counteroffered, and he still left. So I would never overlook that element.
I think it all added up, JB, because, taking him from Kelly, Jared Parker was gone, number one in total offense and scoring offense and yards per play. But I have to admit, when I went to the message board, I thought, oh, boy, here we go. Because the one thing that I never saw mentioned was, another guy that Freeman worked with before. And I don't think I'm sure somebody said that, but I didn't see that comment. I fully expected this to be to get a negative reaction from Notre Dame fans, and that didn't happen. And I think it's largely because what happened 5 minutes ago, he had the number one offense in the country, and I get that.
Yeah, it's the thorough nationwide search, like, bag that. If you know who your number one candidate is, which Marcus said that he knew immediately, and, like, let's be clear. When Jared Parker first interviewed for Troy was not a week ago. It was midweek in Dallas when he was out on a recruiting trip. So it's not when he got the job. That was about 4 or 5 days later after word had gotten out about it. So Marcus was prepared for this. It was funny. Somebody asked him today about, like, so how does that work? How do you reach out to somebody when, maybe he just signed a contract. And he's like, well, I know Mike Denbrock. Also, the representation is the same. So I'd say, like, look, this was as seamless as it is ever going to get for Notre Dame. And it's not just Marcus Freeman. It's not just Mike Denbrock. It's not just Jack Swarbrick and Notre Dame paying quite a bit. And, like, the fourth year, I think, is the critical, like, tipping point for Notre Dame there. They were willing to sort of get out and maybe I don't want to say overly invest, but, like, go somewhere that where they had not gone before. But then also the representation being seamless, where it's just like you're dealing with one party on an agent level instead of two or three different ones, which I think we saw a year ago. If you're dealing with some agents that maybe don't have their stuff together, things can go sideways in a hurry, and then you're left holding the bag. It's a bad look. Notre Dame hit on all levels on this one.
Yeah, and Clint Dowdle has Marcus Freeman, and Clint Dowdle has Mike Denbrock. And so there you go. Clint Dowdle would have known precisely that Mike Denbrock hadn't signed a final version of his MOU.
Because he would have signed it.
Yes, bingo.
And as it relates to his dismissal from Notre Dame in 2016, that was a 4-8 season. There was a purge. Somebody was going to have to pay.
Well, if it wasn't him, it was Brian Kelly. It was all the guys or Brian Kelly.
And I've talked to Denbrock about that.
Chose the guys.
Like, right, so I asked Denbrock about that a couple years ago for a story I was doing on Kelly. And he said, like, there was a role for me to come back in, but, like,
yeah,
that wasn't the role that I wanted to do. And so I made the decision to move on. And he didn't seem to harbor any ill will towards Kelly at the time, which clearly came back around and, he went to LSU with him. But I think that the universal sort of embrace of Denbrock is, like, look, Notre Dame loves people that love Notre Dame. Mike Denbrock loves Notre Dame. Therefore, people at Notre Dame will love Mike Denbrock. And I think that that's part of it. Marcus Freeman referenced that today too, that, and I've heard this before today, that I think Marcus was like, wow, people really like this guy around here, and that counts for something.
Well, he's not low maintenance. He's no maintenance. Yeah. And he blends with the staff. He communicates and teaches the players. I love the guy too. We all feel the same way. All of us that have had experiences with him, it's very positive. Tim, you had one more thing to add about that?
I was going to mention, I think it shows growth too. I mean, he was pissed in 2016, yes, when the coordinator job was taken from him and play calling was not going to be an option. At the moment, he was pissed. So I think he clearly got over it because he went to work with the guy that fired him and now back to the school where he got fired from in two different stops. But Mike Denbrock also gave us the greatest quote a long time ago. The fake confidence quote. That was Mike Denbrock.
Oh, that was him. That is a great quote.
But he looked out there and said, there's fake confidence and there's a bunch of guys in the corner. And then there's real confidence. And he pointed to Will Fuller.
Ah! Yeah, by the way, like the 2015 offense, I know people focus on this last offense here. 2015 was pretty, I like that offense. I don't know how you guys felt about it.
It's pretty enjoyable, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
Now I get Will Fuller. I'll be good. Mm-hmm. You guys know how I feel about Will Fuller.
Mm-hmm. And a microphone.
Can I ask a question?
All right. Maltese Irish. How does CJ Carr's game fit into what Denbrock likes to do offensively?
Okay. Well, this has come up because of some of the things that I wrote about what Denbrock did with Desmond Ridder and Jaden Daniels. And, you know, I mean, CJ Carr's neither one of those guys in terms of running the football. He's not Riley Leonard either, but I think JB, this is going to fall into what you're saying about Denbrock's versatility. I think Carr is certainly a good enough athlete that can be part of the equation. You know, we're not, you know, I mean, I'm not talking about every running play is a read option, but I think there are times where, you know, you're on the boundary side of the field, it's first and 10, and all it takes is for the quarterback to take the snap and go to the short side of the field, and it's second and 3. He's certainly a good enough athlete to do things like that. Quarterback draws. Hell, I've seen Ben Gulbranson run quarterback draws for touchdowns at Oregon State. If he can do that, CJ Carr can do that.
Yeah, I think CJ Carr's athleticism, and we'll see it more as spring unfolds, but there probably hasn't been enough discussion of CJ Carr's athleticism, because I do think he's not just a statue with a rocket arm. I think he has all the necessary tools to be developed into a very high-end quarterback. Riley Leonard's kind of a freak. I talked to some coaches who saw him on the recruiting trail, and they talked about some of his dunks when he was playing basketball. I don't think we're necessarily going to see that. But again, Mike Denbrock has utilized a wide spectrum of quarterbacks through the years, and I think that will benefit him immensely and benefit CJ Carr and Riley Leonard immensely moving forward.
Next question from Bill V6118. Is Matt Salerno going to play in the Sun Bowl? I feel like he was on the too deep initially, but now I have not seen or heard his name lately.
We haven't had many Matt Salerno questions asking for him and whether he'd be on the field. And so I thought I would include this. Yes, he's healthy. Marcus Freeman said today at the press conference that it was Salerno's goal from the very beginning when he was injured in game 2, that he would be back and ready to roll in the bowl game. I still contend that had he been around, I think Sam Hartman would have connected with him for, I don't know, 10 or 12 catches over the course of a season, but we never had an opportunity to see that. I think Matt Salerno can be a really nice safety valve for Steve Angeli in this game.
Yeah, the three to, I think he's the fourth receiver in the game. I don't mean the starting lineup is just whoever starts because of the first play they want to run, but Thomas, Greathouse, Faison are clearly the top three receivers, and I think Salerno will play more than Colsey, who will play more than K.K. Smith, and that would be the natural breakdown of the wide receivers. Colsey didn't play a lot anyway before he was hurt. He didn't. He had eight snaps against Navy. I mean, that was just – one of them was really cool. He had a touchdown run, so people remember it.
Question from Mac99, what should our expectations be for Steve Angeli in this game? Will they put the ball in his hands or lean on the run game more?
I mean, you would think they would lean on the run game as much as possible and have Steve Angeli then do, you know, work play action off of it. Angeli has shown a pretty good knack for that in his limited work this season. But I think somebody asked me is like, well, what if Steve Angeli looks like Miller Moss against Oregon State? Will that change them? Like, I don't think that Notre Dame in a million years would ask Steve Angeli to do what Lincoln Riley asked Miller Moss to do against Louisville. Because I don't think Notre Dame would win if they did that. But I think for Steve Angeli, it's a great opportunity to just run the entire operation when the game is on the line, under pressure, under stress. I'm not just talking about pass rush. I'm just talking about, like, you may lose the game when you're in. Come out the other side of that, and whether that is great tape for Notre Dame in a competition next year or it's great tape for a different staff at some other school, it's a huge opportunity for Steve Angeli to showcase himself, not just to Notre Dame, but to maybe some other programs who may need a quarterback a year or 2 years from now.
This is where I give credit to Notre Dame. When they did play Angeli over the course of this season, they let him run the offense. They let him throw the football. Yep. They let him hit Flanagan on a beautiful play for a touchdown. They let him operate the entire system, particularly late against Tennessee State, and I think the other one was Pittsburgh. So I give Notre Dame tremendous credit for that.
Tim, what do you see changing? Do you see changes with Angeli?
I think maybe a little bit more read option stuff. Yeah. But otherwise, you know, I mean, I look, your receiver corps is as healthy as it's been. Get the football right in your hands and see if it's as good as we thought it had a chance to be early in the season before Jaden Thomas suffered injuries and Faison had to be developed and great. You know, it all started with the Duke game when Thomas and Greathouse were out. And then it never seemed to be able to recover until maybe, I guess, a little bit later in the season. But, you know, again, Gino Guiduli said, oh, this is going to be a different offense. I don't buy that. There's not enough time to do that. You know, Angeli's not experienced enough to change the offense. I think this is essentially, I'm sure there are some things that Guiduli wants to do and likes to do that Parker did or didn't do, he didn't agree with. I'm fairly certain of that. So I think we'll see some wrinkles, but you don't have enough time to change your offense with an inexperienced quarterback. Get the ball in the hands of Jeremiah Love. Do some different things with Jeremiah Love. I certainly agree with that. But in the real world of football, it's really difficult to change everything that you're doing for bowl game number one and number two with a bunch of opt-outs in a different offensive line. That's just not reality.
I have this is a good follow-up question from Kay Beasley. Did the opt-outs and transfer portal on both teams cause Notre Dame's game plan to change? For example, does the lack of wide receiver depth lead itself to run heavy attack? Well, that wouldn't change anything. But does Notre Dame blitz a sizable amount defensively given the lack of 2023 playing time for Oregon State's QB?
I think this presents a great opportunity for Al Golden to turn some guys loose. And we've seen him over the course of the season continue to utilize some different blitzes at different moments. And you've got a veteran core of guys back on the defensive side of the ball for Notre Dame. And as you guys already alluded to, Jack Kaiser said, we want to get Jalen Snead in some one-on-one matchups. I think Jalen Snead can be an impact player in some of those one-on-one matchups in this game.
They're going to blitz the crap out of Oregon State. Right. I mean, it's I don't know how Oregon State scores 10 points in this game. I really don't. I have a hard time figuring out, short of like special teams turnovers or a pick six, like how does Oregon State consistently score in this game?
There are a few pick sixes in last year's bowl game.
I've got them with 13 points, Pete, and I mean. Me too. They're down three starting offensive linemen. They're down a great starting offensive lineman comparable to what Notre Dame is. I totally agree. All Golden will blitz you if your offensive line's intact. This one isn't even close to that. So I totally agree.
You might not have to blitz them because you can just beat them with rushing four. I don't know. It's you would consider that as well. I just think that Al Golden is going to dominate the Sun Bowl.
I have three thoughts on this question and really the whole bowl game, really this whole game. Al Golden's going to dominate the Sun Bowl after he adjusts when he sees what Oregon State is bringing. I do think Oregon State's going to have one of those frustrating drives like almost every team had this year. Central Michigan, Stanford, everybody going down the field one time.
Yeah, Wake Forest in particular, right?
Right. And they come back and they say, I had never seen that one time on tape. Well, I guarantee you, you're not going to have seen what Oregon State runs to begin this game on tape because they have no reason to do what they were doing under DJ and a quarterback that didn't play. The other thing is, if the under of Oregon State's points of 16.5, that's the bet. Because crazy things can happen. And you can score points in weird ways, but I cannot imagine Oregon State putting together two touchdown drives and a field goal. The other thing is, if Notre Dame, I wanted to put this in the last question too. If Notre Dame's offense struggles a little bit early, you know how this game should change for Notre Dame strategically? They should punt when they would normally want to go for it in plus territory at the 46-yard line, because there is no chance Oregon State's going 90 yards against this defense.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Tim. I totally agree with that. JB, I know John's biting the bullet here for Irish Illustrated today. While we bask in the sun in El Paso, he's going to have to jump off and go do a little bit of basketball, men's basketball coverage. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that we heard Marcus Freeman even allude somewhat to that very, very element when we last visited with him, maybe on signing day over in the stadium, when he talked about he's learned and grown as a coach, that his inclination is he wants to go for it and be aggressive every time, but sometimes it's better to take the points, or sometimes in this situation, it is completely better to play the field position game, because this Oregon State offense, unless there's just a tremendous bust, is not designed whatsoever to march the field with any sort of consistency on Notre Dame's defense. And sorry, don't take it personally that I would rather talk to Micah Shrewsbury than a few more minutes with you guys for the rest of today.
Well, if it's last time we talked to Micah Shrewsbury, you really want to be there.
Yeah, trust me, I'm hoping for some quotes, baby.
we'll share your prediction of the game, JB, when that time comes. Question, I wanted to include this question from Tommy Clydesdale, and because there is an answer to this. What is the latest you are hearing about a new Goog or Goog makeover being on the drawing board? Pete, you have...
I don't have the blueprints in front of me, but one thing that was interesting in sort of reporting on Lauren Landau a little bit was he was hired with the new building in mind. Training, recovery, optimizing athlete performance. So that will be a big part of it. I like the Landau hire even more after I had heard that, that it wasn't just come in and please do what Matt Bayless did in the room that Matt Bayless did it. It's, you're going to have all this new space to work with, hopefully new tech to work with, new recovery implements to work with. But unless something's changed, it's going to be on those tennis courts between the practice field and Goog 1.0. But in terms of the timeline of it, I mean, as we have all known for a while, like Notre Dame is pretty conservative about shovel in the ground. So I wouldn't sit here and predict when that's going to happen.
It's our understanding of that, you know, it's beyond drawing board level. The funding for it is in, and they're going to break ground in the spring as soon as the weather breaks. It's our understanding that is going to happen.
I think that I've had great success parking in those tennis court spots illegally recently, Pete and Tim. Yeah, well, now I'm going to have to find another one to get myself a little closer.
You have to give that up.
From Sigles. Go ahead, Tim. This is a good one.
From Sigles, pick a first-time starter who you think will shine. And Sigles says, you can't choose Jordan Faison because MVP is an entirely different category.
That's some
first-time starters who will shine. So who are some of those first-time starters are?
At
running back, Jagasaw. Baker actually started two games and lost that job 2 years ago.
Angeli,
of course.
Snead is another option.
Snead is an option.
And if you want to go with first-time real regulars, you could probably throw in, you could throw in K.K. Smith's the first-time ever player. You could throw in...
Jaden Mickey will start at corner, we expect.
Yeah, he's been through the ringer. He started a few times. Let's say Christian Gray, if he starts at nickel. My guy would be Love and Gray.
Those would be my guys. Yeah. Thanks for stealing that, O'Malley. I appreciate it. Love is
well positioned with the head coach supporting that supposition that he's well positioned. It looks like he's going to get plenty of touches. I would imagine he gets 12 to 15 touches.
That's got to be right. I would think that's. I do believe all three guys are going to get the ball in that seven time range. I mean, seven plus. That has never happened before for them. I just feel like they use Payne. They're going to use Jabron Payne. Just because they don't put him out there for an interview doesn't mean Dylan McCullough, who's 100% in charge of the running back rotation, isn't going to put him in.
Right. I know that Oregon State, I believe this is the first time. Of course, it's the first time kicker. Everett Hayes, who's replacing Atticus Sappington, who opted out of the bowl. It just still astonishes me that a kicker opted out of a bowl game. I'm sure there's a plan there. I haven't spent any time to dig up what it is. But Atticus Sappington, from a novel written in 1878.
Was he recalled to his Shakespearean traveling troupe of actors?
Excellent. I'm not sure, but I know that he will not be in uniform tomorrow. We have a question from Andy.
Seersucker suit, you would have showed up to the game in.
Andy Lawyer 1990. Who else is Notre Dame targeting in the portal? I have a name if you guys.
Sure. Who is it? Is he a Heisman winner? We always want Heisman winners coming to Notre Dame in the portal these days. Is he a good one?
Yeah. No, but it is a guy that's caught 143 passes for more than 2,000 yards and 13 touchdowns at Cal, and that's 6'2", 200-pound Jeremiah Hunter. This past season, he had 62 catches for 703 yards. That's an 11.2-yard average and 7 TDs. I've watched some film of him. I think he's more of a possession receiver, but he's a guy that catches a lot of passes. He's a volume receiver like Chris Mitchell coming in from Florida International. I wouldn't call Bo Collins a volume receiver, but Jeremiah Hunter, I would, and I think that Notre Dame has a good shot at him.
Wait, so from Cal, you say?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just saying that's a really good trade by Notre Dame's general manager in the offseason.
If that's a straight up trade, Notre Dame will take that trade 10 times out of 10 times. The reference, of course, being to Tobias Merriweather, who still has a world of ability and may find his footing at Cal, but was not able to find it at Notre Dame.
Yeah, it's amazing how much production it happens elsewhere among wide receivers. Because it was like Bo Collins, Chris Mitchell, there's Jeremiah Hunter. There's just a lot out there that, for whatever reason, Notre Dame just didn't have.
Teams that didn't have a guy with 29 catches leading the receiver.
Yeah, yeah. So to add all of those guys would be awesome for Notre Dame. But I would say also Hunter almost made a really nice catch at Notre Dame Stadium at the very end of the game, if you remember that correctly.
Oh, believe me.
That would have changed the course of history, perhaps, for some people. But I was told that there's a offensive lineman who's not in the portal that they are keeping very close tabs on. And if he goes in, they will make a big push for him. I unfortunately do not know who this person is. Otherwise, I would tell you. But that was the other sort of portal, hey, watch this. Just keep an eye on this bit that was passed along to me.
I think I know who that is, but I can't think of its name. So that's
good radio too, right there.
That's as good. Yeah, that's as good as being in the position you are and not knowing.
Thanks, appreciate that. That's really good radio on that one. Other spots. I mean, I still think they need a safety, but if they don't get one, I think they need a starting safety. If they don't get one, they're going to have 8 or 9 safeties, so that's plenty. And you know, they like to say we love everybody in our room; they'll be just fine. But I would get a starting safety. And after that is when I talked about the spring thing where some people are going to leave when they are third string in Mike Denbrock's offense. No matter how much they like Mike Denbrock, when you're third string and you don't get that many snaps until the blue goal game because they don't care if you get hurt, you might transfer.
Yeah, we're going to go straight to predictions from there. We're going to skip that last question there. And so I throw it. Well, you have JB's prediction, Tim?
I do, yes. Pete Sampson gets to go first, though, while I pick up. You guys don't know the offensive lineman's name, and I can't pull up JB's prediction until Pete Sampson goes first. So now we're all now. This is preparation at its finest right now.
I stand by what I said 10 minutes ago. I don't know how Oregon State scores up very much in this game. I think that Notre Dame will figure itself out offensively. And look, Oregon State has some material on the defensive line. But I just think that, like, Notre Dame was a better football program at full strength, and they're still a much, much better program than Oregon State when you remove their leading tackler, their top two quarterbacks, their top running back, three of their offensive linemen, two starters in the secondary, Atticus Sappington. It's just they lost a lot, and I think that Notre Dame may run away with this in the second half. So in an homage to a different bowl game Notre Dame played in that I famously mispredicted, I'll go Notre Dame 33, Oregon State 9.
Hey, Brock Purdy is not walking through that door for Oregon State. And if he does, Notre Dame's in a little bit of trouble because they have a new nickel. JB leaned in heavily on the defense as well. I'm reading from his staff predictions. And he went Notre Dame 21, Oregon State 17. Kind of looked at like the consistency of both teams' defenses more than the offenses, with a little bit of a nod to Oregon State's quarterback that has actually started 10 games, which I do think helps a lot. I just think Angeli will handle it fine. I'm a little closer than Pete, but I feel the same way about not many points for Oregon State. I said it earlier in the podcast. At some point, they're just coming out with seven straight things that Al Golden has not seen on tape because they have no reason not to. It's a interim coach for the first time going out there with quarterback that's not going to play and everything else coming in. It's going to look a little funky. That doesn't mean they need to score a touchdown on that drive. I have Notre Dame 23-13. And the reason it's not 24-13 is at some point Marcus Freeman will realize the offense has to be careful to not lose the game. And there are three field goals and two touchdowns rather than like four touchdowns for Notre Dame.
This is a rare instance where I reveal my pick on the day of the podcast before the game, because we went a day later than normal with our podcast. And interestingly enough, my prediction is the same as Tim O'Malley's at 27-13. And that isn't necessarily a touchdown and two field goals. It could be a missed extra point by Everett Hayes filling in for Atticus Sappington. Who knows? I have not seen any film on Everett Hayes, the kicker for Oregon State. I can promise you that.
I think Jack Freeman did. He told me his staff pick wasn't ready because he was watching copious amounts of film on their special teams this morning. So there is, if he saw it, he could jump in.
We will be waiting for Jack's report on the Four Horsemen Lounge. Until tomorrow, join us at irishillustrated.com for all of our pre- and post-game coverage. Of course, we'll have a pre- and post-game incident analysis, O'Malley and myself. And until tomorrow, from Sun Bowl Stadium, Tim Priester, Tim O'Malley, and Pete Sampson, this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.